Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Michigan Literary Network Radio for Wednesday, April 5th, 2017. Happy National Poetry Month to all my fellow poets. I'm Andrea Daniel, and today my guest is poet, teacher, and editor Deontay Osiande, whose new book is Class. Deontay Osiande is a former track and field sprinter turned writer from Detroit, Michigan. He writes nonfiction essays, and his poems have been nominated for the Best of the Net Anthology, a Pushcart Prize, and published in numerous publications. He has represented Detroit at multiple National Poetry Slam competitions. He's currently a professor of English at Wayne County Community College and teaching youth through the Inside Out Detroit Literary Arts Program. His first full collection of poems entitled Class is now out with Urban Farmhouse Press, and I want to welcome Deontay Osiande to Michigan Literary Network Radio. Hello, Deontay.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How you feeling?
I'm here, so,
okay.
It's all good.
Right. Good. Here is good. We have a lot of ground I want to cover in our conversation today, Deontay, but I want to start out the conversation with one of your poems from your new book. Can you read something for us?
Sure. Poetry as a means of survival to endangered species. My black students laugh wildly in the classroom, but when I ask them to write what mask they would wear, they grow silent as a forest nobody hears, wondering what change of face will help them live longer. My students write about their personal disappointments, about how they're a generation of premature martyrs, how their skin is this weird hybrid camouflage, how nobody seems to notice them until they're dead. They know their lives are being treated like fields of grass. Nobody says they have a problem with them being cut short. They're becoming the foundations of gardens. Black girls and boys being buried before blossoming, broken bodies bearing bullets burled beneath their bones. I know why they have trust issues instead of trust funds. Nobody is banking on their survival. They are not safe. I know what it feels like to be a generation drowning in silence. I know how it feels to be a generation disappearing when we are dying. My face is a mask. It fools my mirror, tells it I'm older, sort of survivor. I own the man I am underneath, the one that hears the horrifying sound of endangered children falling like forests. I know how a shotgun on a porch could send a young girl asking for help silent. I know how a pistol on a watchman could choke a young boy's sweet tooth on his own blood. I know a classroom is just a reservation. Outside, we're considered big game by people with guns who call us a threat. I teach my students everything I know in these poems, as if I'm not still on the run with them.
Wow. Okay, two things. What's the name of that one?
Masks.
Masks. Okay, and do me a favor. Can you just repeat the first line for me?
I teach poetry as a means of survival to endangered species.
Okay, let's go there. Let's talk about that, just that particular subject, teaching poetry as a means of survival. And we can also talk about writing poetry as a means of survival. Talk about that a little bit, because I know that's a something that you do. You're a writer.
Yeah. I mean, for lack of a better way to say it, I am a writer, I guess professionally, but also it's something that I need to do. It's something that is, like drinking water, eating food, and, I tend to feel, sick when the writing isn't coming to me like it should. So when I'm teaching my students and I'm teaching them about, you know, writing about these different techniques and all these different sorts of things, and there was one time I came into the classroom and I asked them, like, yeah, today is going to be a simple day. Write for me what you live for. You know, it could be a joyous experience, it could be a negative experience, but write what you live for. And that was a big thing for them, because they had never had anybody, you know, ask them, you know, something of that caliber before. So, yeah.
Wow. And did it, and the writing that came out of that for them, what was that like for you and for them? Because did you have them read it in the class, or did you have them keep it to themselves? Which was it?
A little bit of both. Like, you know, I always offer the option to share, but I always tell them, like, I'm not going to make you share. So if you guys don't feel like sharing your poems today, that's all perfectly fine, just so long as you wrote something. And usually, like, 9 times out of 10, I get a few of them that want to share and want to give feedback, but, you know, maybe one or two of them is like, I just want to, you know, I like what I did. Like, they'll show me their poem, but they're like, I don't really want to share it in front of everybody. I'm like, that's fine. That's perfectly cool. And I think that kind of makes it easier for them to develop as writers in my classroom, the fact that, you know, I don't, so on the rare occasion that, like, none of them want to share, that I'm just like, all right, well, you know, we can either do another workshop or I can let you guys out early. And oddly enough, more often than not, they want to do another workshop. So I'm like, all right, we can do that.
Okay. Good. So they see the benefit of writing for themselves, for their, maybe for their own emotional benefit.
Like, oftentimes I end up oversharing in the classroom. You know, I tell them things about my personal life, and I'm like, yeah, but poetry can be therapy. Like, yeah, it's something that I do as a job, but it's something that I also do, you know, for recreation, and something that I also do to just get things off my chest, because too often, you know, we think we have to be strong and we have to hold all these things in, but holding it in is just going to be cancerous towards us. But actually, where the stress comes from is being able to share your perspective, being able to, you know, share your feelings, and, you know, have the wherewithal to say, like, you know, this is how I feel, this is how I think, and I don't care if you agree with it or if you don't, you know, that's me putting my flag in the sand. And that takes, you know, infinitely more balls to do than, you know, to not say anything.
Right. Exactly. So let's talk about your book class that you read Masks from, which was a wonderful poem. What kind of book is class?
What do you mean?
Is it your coming out as a deeper poet kind of book? Is it a book that's mostly written for you? Is it really revealing and very personal for you? You know, that kind, along those lines.
I would say it definitely is really personal, but it's also part of a concept that I had. You know, I've been working on a class in the subsequent follow-up to that, and the completion of the trilogy of that since about 2011, 2012. And I've been working on developing those three books to be finished in succession. So, like, there's definitely a concept and a plan behind all of it, but class it opens up with an experience that I had in the classroom where I was just kind of like, oh, wow, how do I react to this situation? And then it kind of goes, you know, back into how I developed my thought processes over the years of being a teacher, over the years of being a student, and over the years of just being like a member of a family. And then it proceeds to go, you know, back into the present. So it's kind of like really personal to me because within the book, I share a lot of personal stories that, you know, ultimately led up to, you know, what I decided to do in the classroom in that moment. But all of the poems in there are like scene. And the whole book all together is like a film. So you get to see all these scenes that made up me as an individual. So, yeah, it's kind of personal because, you know, I share all of that with the reader, with the audience.
Wow. Okay, so, if you don't mind, I don't know if you want to, but what was that experience that jumped off everything about this book class?
Sure thing. You know, I was still working on the whole concept, you know, that I was thinking of for these three books. And I came into, you know, one of my college classrooms. I believe this was like fall 2013 or something like that. And, you know, there were a bunch of helicopters around campus, and I was like, oh, well, that's odd. So in the middle of, you know, teaching my lesson, a woman from the front office comes into the room. And she's like, you know, can I quickly interject? I just need to make an announcement to your students. And I'm like, oh, okay, sure, you can do that. And she's saying, like, you know, there was recently, well, recently as in then, a shooting at a college, I believe in Oregon, either Oregon or Washington. And because of that, we're having police on campus to do training exercises in case we would have to have a similar situation. So if you see police dogs or, you know, are wondering why the cops are walking around campus or wondering what the helicopter is about, you know, that's what it's for. And, you know, I made a quick comment to her, like, you know, well, thank you as the instructor, but also as a Black person for both raising and lowering my blood pressure at the same time. You know, my class, you know, they all laughed at that. And then one student said, like, something to the, you know, well, I should go out there and act like I have a gun, you know, so the cops could shoot me and I could, you know, collect all the insurance money or my family could collect, you know, all that money. And I was just like, whoa, this escalated quickly. And, you know, that was both the starting point and because class, it starts off, you know, with that moment and it goes back in time and then it goes back forward. So that's the starting point and the ending point of the book. And I guess you have to read it to see what I decided to do.
Right. Well, with that that's an interesting jumping off point, and I can see how that would strike you as like, whoa, okay. So with that said, I think that it's time to hear another poem from the book.
Okay. I could share a short one.
Okay.
Margaret immigrated here last summer from Nigeria. Says she saw my name and decided to take my class, not knowing how I'm a half-truth. She reminds me of my unauthentic nature without trying to. Although I'm a deception, translating the radio static everyone else hears when she speaks English isn't difficult. She proudly tells her classmates how to correctly pronounce my last name, accurately shares the origins of my deceit. She says my first name has no meaning in her hometown, in my homeland. Says the same about my life. I'm packaged with plastic popcorn, protected but still breaking, alive yet still fragile. I want to apologize for the boys in her hometown who didn't reach my age, for the boys in my hometown who didn't reach my age. Nobody hears how sorry I am, since the thought never migrates outside of my mouth.
Wow. And what's the name of that one?
Translation.
Okay. Wow. And you just heard Translation, a poem from my guest, Deontay Oseyande, poet, teacher, and editor, whose new book is Class. And Deontay, one of the lines from that poem is leading me right into one of the things you said you actually wanted to talk about, and it's the line that says, alive but still fragile. And you're very open about what's going on about your life right now. You suffer from depression, and you recently checked yourself in to the hospital to help you heal. Tell us about that and, about mental health, your mental health, and for the mental health of the community.
I checked myself into the hospital. I was going through, a series of situations. I had a weekend where I was just having nervous breakdowns and was contemplating suicidal thoughts. So I just drove into, Providence, Southfield, and I just told them, I know that something is definitely wrong and I need somebody to help me. They left me in the waiting room for maybe a little while. They confiscated all my stuff, which, was understandable. And I just cried in there for like 3 hours because, I was in so much emotional and mental anguish. So they admitted me into the hospital for about a week. And when they first admitted me, I thought the thing that, everybody generally thinks, which is like, oh, man, I'm about to be in the nut house with all these crazy people. Like, oh, my God, how am I going to survive? But I've been frequently telling people that, honestly, 3/4 of the patients in there are kind of like, the conflict between Batman and the Joker, how the Joker says it only takes one bad day for you to turn into me. Like 3/4 of the patients are normal individuals. They just had a bad day, whether it culminated in a nervous breakdown or a suicide attempt or whatever, they just had a bad day and they need to, the therapy, seek the different, stress training and all of that just to help them get reacclimated to life, you know, as it is, not as we want it to be. While I was in there, you know, I said 3/4 of the patients are normal, but that 1/4 is insane as all crazy. And, you know, sitting in there and, like, you know, sharing spaces with those people and to be like, yeah, my life, you know, it definitely sucks right now, and it's going to get better right now because it has to. No matter how bad my situation is, it's not that. It's not, you know, that far gone. I met a guy in there who was like 61 with the mind of a 6-year-old. I met a guy in there who, you know, was highly educated, was a philosopher, but his mind had just snapped. So, like, you know, sometimes when I'd see him in the morning, I'd be like, how are you doing? And he'd be like, how would I know how I'm doing? And I'm like, you are literally the only person qualified on the planet to answer that question. Like, what do you mean? How would you know? You know, I took all that in, and since I've been out, you know, I'm still on the road to recovery, but I'm also serving, I guess, as a vessel to tell people that, like, yo, you need to get your mental health checked out, and it's not, you know, as insane as we think it is. You know, I don't want other people to be combating thoughts of suicide like I was. So, you know, if they need to go into the hospital and get help, like, you know, find a family member that could watch your kids or somebody that could take care of whatever, and just check yourself in to make sure that everything is okay with you. You know, they can't keep you that long. And, you know, sometimes some of us really need it. And we like to think that we're too strong to, especially as Black people, we're too strong to, you know, go into the hospital and ask for help. But lo and behold, some of us, you know, really need it. And the strength comes in knowing when you need to ask for help.
Wow. Yep. The strength comes from knowing. I like that. That is so important. I'm writing what you said. I am. It's because that's an important point, Deontay. The strength does come from knowing what you need to do for yourself and to do it, because, like you said, a lot of people just don't. But as a writer, and I'm, you know, we're always going to turn it back around to writing, has that particular experience, even though class is out and you got to be talking about class, but has that particular experience presented itself in any writings for you, either, you know, as you have been out of the hospital or maybe even while you were in the hospital? And we only have just a few more minutes to keep going. I'm sorry, but I want to keep going, but we have to end in a few minutes.
Yeah, it's cool. Actually, it has. I don't want to give anything away, but you know, depression plays a character in this trilogy of books that I'm trying to write. So depression, I've been able to personify it in my second manuscript, which is entitled Circus, and it's currently being looked at by other publishers. And the third book, I'm currently in the process of finishing that up. But, yeah, I've definitely written things while I was in the psych ward, and since I've gotten out, that has definitely influenced my writing.
Wow, yep, I'm sure it has. I am so sure it has. And I know the project that's going to come out of that is going to be so, so extremely powerful. And I want to just close us out with one last short poem from class. Can we do that?
Yep. We can end it out on the first poem of the book.
Okay.
The paranoia says the helicopter searches for me. As the announcement of the training exercise on campus for the police force comes into my classroom, and I joke about the threat, about my blood pressure, as if there wasn't a shooting at a community college weeks before, as if I want the same complexion as the targets cops use at their shooting ranges.
Whoa, yep, yep. That's it. That is it right there. Do you have any book events coming up? I know it might be a little difficult for you being out in public right now, but is there anything going on around the book class where people can come out and meet you?
Yeah, I have a few events that I'm doing locally. I pretty much canceled the latter half of my book tour just because, you know, I needed time to heal and recover and all of that. But all of my local shows, I'm going to honor those just to, you know, get back into the swing of things. You can follow me at Deonte Osiande, either my Facebook page or on Twitter, to get the exact details of the event, because I currently don't remember them. But I'll be putting up a list of all the local shows within the next couple of days.
Okay, real good, real good. Deonte, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today. I'm just going to tell you, you are one of my most favorite poets, and you are one of the poets that when I see you, you know, on stage, you always make me want to levitate. I always feel like I am lifting out of my seat, and I want to thank you so much for sharing your work and sharing your life with us.
Oh, thank you. It's no problem.
You are welcome. You are welcome. And so I will see you out and about in Detroit. And thank you again for being my guest. And I want to wish you all the best.
Thank you. Thank you. You too.
You are so welcome. All right. Take care now. Good night.
All right. Good night.
And that is it for this edition of Michigan Literary Network Radio. Thank you again to Deonte Osiande for being my guest. Check him out on Facebook and on Twitter to find out when he's going to be out in the community sharing his work. And remember to stay connected with Michigan's literary network and literary community through the Michigan Literary Network and Motown Writers Network at www.motownwriters.com. And you can find us on Facebook. And be sure to tune in to Michigan Literary Network Radio on Blog Talk Radio next Wednesday from 5:30 just to hear more literary good stuff as we continue exploring National Poetry Month with my guest Rhonda Welsh to talk about her new book, Black Swan. This is Andrea Daniel for Michigan Literary Network Radio. Thank you out there for listening. I appreciate you so much. I want you to have a good rest of your day and live a good story. And if you are so inclined, write about it. Thank you. Talk with you all next week. Bye-bye.